Only the state legislature can start a constitutional amendment. Except this year, when an opportunity opens for a constitutional convention. Well, should we? It's on the ballot to vote yes or no. People usually vote no. Does that pass up an opportunity? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today, more about a constitutional convention. Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. It's Talk of Alaska Live and statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Okay, you may need a notepad for this show. We're doing our homework, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing some more civics homework about Alaska. I would say the chances are very slim that that Alaskans would approve a constitutional convention, but they do get the opportunity every 10 years to do that because that's what the Constitution says. And by golly, we've got one of the people that wrote the Constitution with us in the room today, and we've dwelled on this subject in the past, and I really found it exhilarating and interesting. I learned about our Constitution, and I also entertained some thoughts thanks to John Havelock, who wrote the book Let's Get It Right, Why We Need an Alaska Constitutional Convention. Really got me to thinking about things that could be done in a constitutional convention. And so who should call up but Vic Fisher and say, well, how about the other side? And Vic was a delegate to the constitutional convention, and he has defended it since. And welcome back to the show, Vic.
Thanks, Steve. I don't think the Alaska Constitution needs defense any more than the Constitution of the United States.
No defense needed.
Right.
Well, what do you think about a constitutional convention? It's in there every 10 years. Why is that even in there?
Well, I could give as many reasons for having a constitutional convention as my friend John Havelock did, but there's got to be a time, there's got to be proper conditions for having a constitutional convention, and I don't think this is neither the time nor do we have the proper conditions for having a convention in the foreseeable future.
I'll mark you down as a no vote.
A solid no vote, and I can give you lots of reasons why it should be a no vote.
Well, but let's also look into some of the things that could be accomplished with a constitutional convention, which I'm sure you admit are problems. So, you know, I put it down that, and John Havelock's theory is times change. The Constitution was written at a time very different from our own, and maybe it needs to be updated. And most people would agree with that, but the problem comes with the risk of opening the process up, I think, is what makes people nervous. Do I have that right? Do you think the Constitution could stand some fixing?
Oh, every Constitution could use some fixing. The United States Constitution could use lots of fixing. But opening up the U.S. Constitution wouldn't make much sense in this day and age. And we have a situation in Alaska, as you have in the country, where we have extremes wanting to have their way. They would want to rewrite the basic concepts of the Constitution. And I can get into specifics, but I think one of my big concerns is that we have a situation now where we have a society that's ripped virtually in half. We have a lot of people who say, well, don't compromise, don't talk to the other side, don't work with the others. You're a traitor to us, to yourself if you do work with the opposition. And The Alaska Constitution was written at a time when Alaskans were unified instead of being divided. Alaskans were unified in favor of statehood, and the Constitution was written before we were becoming a state. You did not have lobbyists. You did not have special interests pushing in this direction and that direction, trying to get their specific babies into the Constitution as you would have today.
Well, take me back to that time, which I'm sure you've done many times, but but let's go back there again. In fact, we were on this very show. We had you and Jack Cockley in here one time and just had a grand old time remembering the nuts and bolts of what happened during the convention. It was a limited period of time, but it was a fairly long period of time, wasn't it?
It seemed like a long time, but there was never enough time, and at the end it was almost 24 hours a day work, and it was exhilarating work because everybody was working together. It was one unified group with a dream of having statehood and building a constitution for the future state. It was still a future state, and we were out to prove to the United States, to the Congress, that we were a mature people, that we knew, we understood what a constitution should be, and that we could build a proper foundation and structure for the future state. And it was the unity, the common vision, that was really the important thing that we were able to build into the constitution at the time. Also, we had advisors who brought to us all the experiences of other states. Mostly we learned what not to do. For instance, we have probably the best judiciary system in the whole United States. Our judges are appointed by merit. They stand up for confirmation. The people have a chance to decide whether to retain them or not.
Every once in a while, they decide not to.
Very occasionally. And then proof is great. It isn't just like an election, you throw the rascals out. You actually have a foundation if you do turn somebody down. But the opposite choice, and there's still people out there in Alaska who would love to see judges elected. And that leads to bringing politics into judiciary, bringing money into elections of judges, and it's probably the last thing you'd want to do. I mean, it was innovations like that that are part of the Alaska Constitution.
One that, certain ones keep coming back, and one of them is no dedicated funds. Do you stand behind that now?
We have a provision for no dedicated funds in the Constitution, and there are exceptions, number one and number two. The fact that we have the permanent fund in the Constitution proves that the Constitution is changeable. As conditions change, we can amend the Constitution, and in the 1970s, we amended the Constitution to provide that part of the revenues from oil and other non-renewable resources go into a permanent fund, not less than 25% of certain revenues, and we have the permanent fund in the Constitution, so that that proves that when we need change, we can affect change.
If you can get it through the legislature.
If you can get it through the legislature, and we have managed to do so time and again on very important provisions like the right to privacy and other provisions that have updated constitutions and built in values that might have been considered but didn't get a majority vote to put into the Constitution at the time.
Well, the appendix of John Havelock's book, Let's Get It Right, has a list of the constitutional amendments, and including the ones that failed, and quite a few of them failed. But it almost goes in periods. There's a lengthy period from 1966 to 1976 when every single amendment passed. But then we had a bunch that were rejected, And then it kind of went back and forth, and that's the way it's been more checkerboardy. As time goes on, there have been more amendments rejected. But the drift of them, if you look at it, has been messing with the separation of powers. It could be argued that the legislature has increased its power through constitutional amendment down through the years. Take, for one example, the initiative, the power of initiative, and how they've diluted that to the point where you almost wonder if it's worth it anymore.
Right. I have supported, I have opposed amendments. We have a history of the governor wanting to intrude on the judiciary branch and the legislative branch. Legislators want to intrude on the executive and the judiciary. The judiciary has been above it all, I would say.
They've done a pretty good job despite rhetoric from time to time, a pretty good job of doing the function of the judiciary, you would think.
Right. I think we've had a fabulous system of courts, well-administered. We've had very good appointments. But the legislature has constantly tried to beget more authority, and the people have turned it down. I mean, I think the people have generally exercise good judgment. I think there have been some bad amendments adopted. A few good ones have been turned down. But all in all, I think the amendment process has worked very well.
You're just going to stand behind it no matter what.
No, I can be very critical of it. But I also know that a constitutional amendment, that having a constitution is not just taking one issue at a time, one amendment at a time, and making decisions up or down, yes or no. When you have a constitutional convention, every single section, every article is open to change. The whole constitution can be thrown out and rewritten from scratch, so that it isn't just I like one thing, or as my friend John Havelock did, he's got a whole analysis, and he did write a good book. It's a very thoughtful book, but I could do a litany of specific items, but a convention can throw out everything that's in there now and do everything from scratch, or they can do specific changes.
And as far as you're concerned, it's not the right time to do that. People are divided when once they were united. I believe I picked that up from you. And this division it would be threatening to the very foundation of our state government. Yes?
I'm not so concerned about threatening to the state government. I think it could be threatening to our basic powers. It could bring in special interest using the Constitution to set limit on how much we can tax the oil companies, or
boy, wouldn't that be something?
Set limits on abortion. I mean, I could give you a whole list of items.
I'm sure the listeners will have a few too.
Where special interests would go in there and try and wrench the Constitution to serve them rather than the people.
Well, Vic Fisher is with us. He is one of our founding fathers, grandfathers, actually. a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, a scholar, a former state legislator, founder, I believe, of the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska Anchorage, among other things. And we're talking once again about our once every 10-year opportunity to call for a constitutional convention. It's a yes or no vote. It's on the it's going to be on the November ballot, and it's very interesting. Years ago, when Red Boucher was the lieutenant governor, he tried to put some language in there describing a constitutional convention for people to vote on. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. It's just going to be there. It's going to say yes or no. Leave the other stuff off. It's very, very interesting. Vic, I hope you're ready for some calls.
I'm I always love to sit here and receive calls.
All right, great. The telephone number, 1-800-478-8255 statewide. In Anchorage, it's a local call, 550-8422. And I'm looking at email right now, and it's blank, except for some spam, at talk@alaskapublic.org. Clay joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Clay.
Hey, thank you. Vic, hello. This is Clay.
Hi, Clay.
Up on the hill. And it's good to hear you. But anyway, about the convention, I love what John had to say in his book. But also, you know, the timing of this with the recent Supreme Court, like just looking at what's happening with ads regarding mining on television. And the unfettered access of corporations to just drive the public understanding of issues. Man, until we get some control on and quit treating corporations as people and recognizing them as corporations. Then we're in, you know, we'd be in real trouble with any public policy issue because it's getting to the point where any non-corporate approach to public policy is going to be totally drowned out. So I totally buy into what Vic is saying at this time, and which is another reason to take a very serious look at the next election and who's going to be appointing the next three or four Supreme Court justices.
Clay,
you're my comment.
Clay, you're stay with us for a second. You're obviously a very thoughtful and bright individual, and
I'm glad you recognize that.
you've got some you know some insights, politically astute insights. I think. What do you think of John's idea that we could actually curb the Citizens United ruling in the state of Alaska by, say, requiring shareholder approval? I mean, I don't know if you heard the when
yeah,
he appeared
you know,
on the
I,
show
I,
a couple
know,
of weeks
I,
ago.
I,
he brought that up, and I said, I think it was so clever, I thought of Jay Hammond right away.
You know, it's an intriguing idea, and but tactics, you know, it's a great strategy, and often tactics can win the game. And I don't know about the tactics that would be involved in being able to take advantage and further that strategy. I mean, that's a really interesting point that you brought up.
Go ahead, Vic.
I think Clay, you're right on that. It is a big issue, and yesterday, unfortunately, there was a program, but Jeffrey Toobin was on KSKA yesterday discussing the Citizens United case and what the Supreme Court did and what the Roberts Court will do in the future, and it sounded to me like it would be a childish exercise to try and write corporate law into the Constitution only to have it stricken down by the U.S. Supreme Court, because that, according to Toobin, is exactly where the Roberts Court is going, that they're going to give corporations more power. They're going to take all the limits of corporate spending for elections. And I think it's very naive to think that we in our Constitution can write something in about having shareholders vote before a corporation can give money, and that we could get away with it.
I'm going to call that the pipsqueak argument.
That's a good name. It's such an unknown. It's such an unknown, and the odds, if you're an odds player, as the occasional trip to Las Vegas will show, you know, you want to play the odds, and the odds are not in favor. It's a good argument, but how it would turn out, I don't know. So I'm with you. I think this is the wrong time for a convention, which means everybody that's much farther right than I am will probably want one.
All right, Clay. Thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Hey, Vic Fisher is our guest. We're talking about the potential of a constitutional convention. He helped write the convention, and he's against the convention. He helped write the Constitution, and he is against a convention this time around. Bob joins the program from Soldotna. Bob, you're on Talk of Alaska with Vic Fisher.
Good morning, Victor. And
good morning,
good
Bob.
Good morning, host. When I heard you come on, I was just going to call and say what a great program this was. And when I heard that Victor was on here, my eyes just lit up. And, you know, this is just the perfect venue for people to listen to. You know, my dad played ball with Red Boucher back in the 40s and 50s up in Fairbanks. I was named Bobby after Bob Bartlett.
Oh, man.
All right.
And, back when I was just a baby in 60s, Bartlett got my dad to go up to Barrow and build the first certified slaughterhouse for reindeer up there. We had a little store up on Badger Road up between Fairbanks and North Pole, and we had a meat shop. And then Dad, he made sausage. And when Bartlett would have parties back in Washington, he would have Dad send his reindeer salami and pepperoni and reindeer products back to Washington. I see Victor you're right up there with George Washington in my book, Victor, as far as the state of Alaska is concerned. And my dad sold meat to Jack Coghill, too. Back in those days, it was an all-day trip from Badger Row down to Enana. And I remember they'd set me up there in the counter, and my dad did business with Jack. And like I say, it was dark. Well, it's summertime, it never really gets dark. But anyway, you're talking about a Constitutional Convention. I found a great speech by Bob Bartlett called "Meeting the Challenge." And Victor, you might remember Mr. Bartlett speaking to the Alaska Constitutional Convention back November 8, 1955. I hadn't been born yet, and he talks. It's a great speech. He talks about Alaska's resources. Where such vast resource potential exists, one not need to be clairvoyant to foresee the influx of interest wanting to develop these resources, and that this is a critical time in Alaska's future history. Development must not be confused with exploitation at this time, and the financial welfare of the state and well-being of the present and unborn citizens depend upon the wise administration and oversight of these developmental activities. Two very real dangers are present. The first and most obvious danger is that of exploitation under the thin disguise of development. Well, you know, I feel that a lot of this has come true, Victor, and Bartlett also talks about political maturity, I don't think that we are mature politically enough right now in the legislature to have a constitutional convention. Because, I mean, all they do is fight anymore. You know, and it makes my heart sad, my friend.
Well, as whoever it was, Payne or somebody said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, or somebody said that hundreds of years ago. And I think the price of self-government is eternal vigilance also. I agree with you. Bartlett was a friend and one of my great heroes. And he was very clairvoyant when he said that 50 years after statehood, the Constitution will be judged by what it says in the resource article and how we manage resources. I think we're still in a trial stage on that. I think the Constitution has worked. The resource article has worked. We've selected fabulous lands for conservation and for development, but exploitation is always a danger.
Yeah, I see that. What one of the other gentlemen was talking about with the major corporations putting so much money into campaigns and such, and commercials on TV. The big mine across the way here, the Pebble Mine, you know, they say it's a partnership and such, and I see that as a way of exploiting our resources. I think that Alaska should develop a corporation, or should have created a corporation, so we can develop our own resources and keep the money here in the state. You know, very little money from mining and such like that will come to the state of Alaska or go towards, as our Constitution mandates, the greatest benefit of the resources to the people. It'll all be going to a foreign company. All that copper and gold, you know, I feel that if anybody's going to be mining in this state, it should be the state of Alaska, and we should be putting that gold in our own vault so that when the time comes, we can stand alone if we have to. You know, we're bordered by a foreign country, and we got several thousand miles of ocean between us and the lower 48. And, you know, I think we have to have faith in ourselves and have to be able to stand on our own when the time comes.
Well, Bob, I think you've got a topic. If we have a constitutional convention, you can raise that as one of the proposals.
Well, I was born here at statehood, and I would very much be very honored if I could be a delegate to that constitution when we do have one, because, you know, I feel things in my heart for the people of Alaska, and this is sacred ground to me. This is where my mother and father's ashes are scattered, and I feel very, very much of this land.
Well, best wishes to you, Bob.
Yes. Well, thank you, and I really enjoy this show.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, I wanted to bring up sausage here for a second.
Okay.
Because I grew up in a butcher shop. And,
you did? Yeah, I did too. Cleaning meat saws. Oh,
yeah.
Man, that was funny. That was
scraping blocks and all that. But what I wanted to bring up is that my grandfather was a traditional German butcher.
Uh-huh.
And he passed on his recipe for his sausage, however he made his sausage. He told Uncle Roy, but he didn't tell anybody else in the family, and Uncle Roy died, and Uncle Roy took the secret with him. So I'm looking for a good sausage recipe now.
Well, if you ever come to Soldotna, I've got a recipe book here. You know, I guess maybe that should be my legacy. I kind of have fuzzy memories of it, but I remember somebody picking me up and hanging me off a rolling meat hook when I was just a toddler, and I got a picture of it with a big reindeer salami in my arm.
Yeah, well, I think, some people compare legislation to sausage. I just needed to throw that in there, Bob.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Sausage is good, you know, and especially reindeer sausage. That was back in the day when it actually had reindeer in it, you know?
Let's not make a sausage out of the Constitution.
No.
All right. Thanks for your call, Bob.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's try one more here from Soldotna. Joanne, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Vic Fisher.
I'm not from Soldotna. I'm from Unalakleet.
Okay. Hi, Unalakleet. Go ahead. Hello.
The state constitution affects rural Alaska very, very much. I think I would vote yes in November Constitution. I was 2 years old when the first Constitution was written, and I think it's outdated for a number of reasons. I think if it were rewritten and the vows were taken, because vows are important and values are very, very important, because these vows are taken between the people and God. When Alaska was sold, I remember doing research and how the Tsar's wife, the Russian Tsar's wife, said, make sure that its natives' peoples are taken care of. This is for all future endeavors. And I think that what makes me really sad, even though I live up here in Midwestern Alaska, and I do have a brother who is a fisherman down in the Bristol Bay area, it makes me really sad that there is a threat to the fisheries down there. There are other things that I can say, but these are some of the more important things that I wanted to bring out.
Joanne, I want to thank you, and I we're going to dwell into that. I wasn't clear what you meant about the vows.
Anytime, the rights and values of people are being considered. You go to the Declaration of Independence, for example, and our founding fathers, you know, they understood much more than we do today. Anytime you're taking a vow, anytime you're taking a declaration or saying a pledge, you are saying this between the Maker, who is God. In my belief, it's God and it's people and his people. And when these vows are broken, there are consequences to them.
All right. I'm gonna try and visit that. So you feel that the Constitution then should be explicit about this?
I think that the Constitution should be revisited. I think that there are powers. For example, the federal government, the oil companies. Now I hear the corporations and whatnot. When I listen to the news, they are a threat. They are always a threat to the. What the state of Alaska wants to initiate. And the latest vote on coastal management, for example, is one of them, and it was voted down.
And you think the Constitution might be a way in the Constitution of maybe curbing the corporate power? Because that was clearly a spending issue, among other things.
For example, yes. And also... the state needs to grow up, period. And part of growing up and acting like it should, including the legislature, is to revisit our belief system, what we think is necessary. And the way to always go back is to look at, initially, what did we say? And what did we say is written in the Constitution.
Well, Joanne, here's how the Constitution... Yes. Here's how the Constitution starts, and it's very much like the Declaration of Independence written several hundred years ago. The Constitution is dedicated to the principles that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and enjoy one of the rewards of their own industry. All persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protection under the law. And the Constitution already provides that resources will be developed and conserved to the maximum benefit of the people. We do have these principles. What we need at this point is not to revise or change the principles. We need to make sure that the legislature and the governor carry them out.
Joanne, yes, go ahead, Joanne.
I have to honestly confess, I haven't read the state constitution yet, but I will at some point in the future. But having after listening to the writer of "Let's Get It Right," the author,
John Havelock, yes.
Person you were,
yes.
I really felt strongly about some of the things I said earlier.
Okay.
And we are affected in rural Alaska. This is a tough place to live.
Yeah. Joanne, thanks for your call. I'm really glad that you're listening so closely to the program. And I need to take a break here, and we'll come back and got a bunch more calls here for Vic Fisher as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik, provimaging.com. Every day, over 4,000 infants and toddlers go to sleep in child care programs across Alaska in unsafe cribs. The Alaska Community Foundation is partnering with THREAD to replace unsafe cribs in licensed child care programs across Alaska with new safe cribs. To help, donate today, and the Alaska Community Foundation will provide a one-to-one match of your donation. To donate, visit alaskacf.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Community Foundation.
It is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the Alaska Constitution and whether we should have a convention. Every 10 years, we get a chance to vote on this, and this is the year. And there hasn't been much talk about it. John Havelock wrote a book about it, former attorney general. And with us today is one of the authors of that Constitution, Vic Fisher, and also author of To Russia with Love, An Alaskan's Journey, an autobiography to be released on October 15th, and we look forward, Vic, to having you on the show to talk about that when that time comes. Also the author of Alaska's Constitutional Convention. I forgot that. I was reading Gordon Harrison's analysis, and I totally forgot that you wrote that.
Yeah, I wrote that back in 1975, so it's not something off the top of my head coming along today.
No. Let's go to Ken, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Ken.
Thank you. Vic, early on in your talk, you mentioned the judiciary. And the chairman of that commission was a man that I revere, George Michael Sean Patrick McLaughlin, who was from New York and realized the harm that popularly elected judges could wreak. He often said, New York has the best judges money can buy. And for that reason, he was a very strong proponent of the so-called Missouri Plan, by which judges are not popularly elected, but however the public has input, as do the lawyers. I am sure you remember that vividly, and I just wanted to comment on that and give George his proper credit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. George McLaughlin was not just a New Yorker. He was a real Alaskan. When we were campaigning for election to the Constitutional Convention, and I might mention that I ran for all of South Central at large as the George and Bill Egan and several others, and I spent about $150 to be elected for this gigantic region from Bristol Bay to Cordova, but George took me down Seward Highway. And we drove all the way down to Seward and stopped at every bar along the way. And wherever George went with his great Irish humor and hail fellow well met, he was greeted by everyone lovingly and brotherly. But George was a really serious lawyer. He was chairman of the Judiciary Committee at the Alaska Constitutional Convention. And he and the others who were involved in that particular committee did a fabulous job in working up the judiciary article that was just as foremost in the country as existed at the time and probably still is the best one. They named a juvenile detention facility after George, but he would have been our first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court had he lived into the statehood days.
Thanks for that memory, and thanks for bringing that one up, Ken.
Thank you.
All right, it's Talk of Alaska. Vic Fisher is our guest. And, you know, our last caller from Unalakleet brought up this, didn't say it right out, but clearly had concerns about rural Alaska. One of the things that John Havelock argues for in his Let's Get It Right book is a unicameral legislature so that we could have districts that were more representative by having more the legislators, instead of having a House and a Senate, having just one so that the districts could be smaller and people would be more and better represented. And clearly she feels that concerns of rural Alaska are not being handled well by the current legislature and is looking to the Constitutional Convention as a possible way to fix this. And when you go back and look at the actual, you know, as Havelock points out, in a way, you guys at the convention were almost like a civic club. Boosters. You wanted statehood, and you wanted to show that Alaska could be a state. And what kind of got lost in there was the natives. Frank Paradovich was there, and that was it.
I have written on that quite a bit. I've worked with First Alaskans Institute. We traveled all over Alaska, held meetings talking about the Constitution and Alaska Natives and Constitution and statehood up in Barrow and Bethel and Juneau and other places. And I am very much aware that the Constitution does not specifically deal with Native issues. And the point was brought up a couple of times by Muktuk Marson, who was the organizer of the Eskimo Scouts during World War II. He was a delegate, right? He was a delegate from Anchorage, and he, better than anybody, represented and talked about the Native peoples. And I am totally with John and others that the Constitutional Convention did not represent the Native interest. There are certain factors involved. At that point, most Natives lived in remote villages. The Constitution dealt with issues that were academic, esoteric, into the future, and not dealing with subsistence. At that point, there was enough fish and game. There was no shortage for subsistence purposes. So you had a totally different kind of a situation than you do today. It's questionable what would be done by a constitutional convention, but certainly the issues of the Native people is something that needs to be accepted within the Constitution. And the issue of subsistence amendment to the Constitution, which was before us, the majority of people in Alaska were strongly supportive of that, and it was four or five votes in the state Senate that kept it from coming to a vote and becoming part of the Constitution. I'm not sure that is, at this point, significant enough to have a constitutional convention, in part because the federal government is giving the Native people in rural Alaska a much greater voice than they ever would have had if the amendment had passed and the state had been managing subsistence, so that I'm not sure that it's as much of an issue as it was 20 years ago.
Mm. Interesting. And, of course, you always, you know, relentlessly campaigned for that constitutional amendment. I recall that.
Yes, I was very strongly for it.
Yeah. Jim joins the program from Eagle River. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Vic Fisher, Jim.
Yes, thank you. I think the excess money in elections is a danger and a hazard to democracy. I remember an initiative petition maybe 30 years ago about bottle deposits, where the opponents outspent the initiative sponsors by 50-1, and the initiative failed by half a dozen percentage points. It's pretty clear if it had had anything like equal funding, it would have passed. So excess money is a poison to democracy and seems to lead toward oligarchy, you know, the rule of the rich. And I think the way to solve it isn't through the Constitution, which has a lot of hazards, changing the Constitution, but we could institute a tax on political campaigns collected weekly, a tax of 30% to go to the opponent. And initiative campaigns, too, PACs or anything that spends on campaigns would be taxed weekly. And I think that would keep anyone from outspending an opponent more than 2-1 and would make the elections more about substance than overpowering the airwaves.
Well, that's kind of a Jay Hammond-esque idea.
Wouldn't cost the taxpayers either.
Yeah.
Jim, I think that lots of approaches of that sort. There's public financing of elections that's come up in a number of states. The friendly U.S. Supreme Court strikes that down too, and we had an initiative that was defeated. I think issues like that are. I'm 100% with you with your concern, and agree that it's not part of a constitutional convention, justifying constitutional convention. But money in politics is a real serious issue, and I wish there weren't a ready fix for that.
I had another about the constitutional convention. This latest Venezuelan constitution has 5 branches of government, one for the prosecutors and another branch for elections. What our lieutenant governor does, division of elections. And that's an interesting idea. I didn't read it very carefully. It's very complicated how they're appointed and they have to be approved by another branch. And then they have their own say. It's a five, supposed to be co-equal branches of government where the prosecutors aren't political and neither are the election or voter registration division.
The only problem in Venezuela is that Chavez controls all 5 of them.
Well, we don't have to import Chavez. I just think the idea is interesting.
Ugo, we get some of Ugo's money. That worked out fairly well. Bush kind of liked that. Yeah, Bob, Jim, thank you for your call.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, we had a call from Bob in Thorn Bay who decided not to stay on the line but wanted to pass along that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and say hi to Mr. Fisher, Bob from Thorn Bay.
Hi, Bob.
It's Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Kinnick Arm Bridge will create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
It's Talk of Alaska. Our guest is Vic Fisher, Constitutional Convention delegate, author of a book on the Constitution, and author of a new book of memoirs that will be out shortly. And this one from Mike in Juneau, fish traps. A method of fishing seems to be a trivial topic for the state constitution. However, if we were to have a constitutional convention, perhaps we would be reminded of the reasons why the use of fish traps are prohibited and apply the same lessons to the oil and gas industry. It's not a good idea to allow corporations too much control of our natural resources. And that from Mike in Juneau.
Well, Mike, that's a great point. The prohibition of fish traps was voted on separately by the people of Alaska as a result of an ordinance that was sort of attached to the Constitution. It's not part of the Constitution itself, but the Constitution does provide that there'll be no exclusive right to fishery. And, of course, we amended that to authorize special permits as needed to protect the resource. The your point is well taken. Ideally, we'd have we could write all sorts of policy into the Constitution or ordinances or legislation.
This one comes from Carol, says the Constitution was written before the concepts of ecology and ecosystems really existed. Would it be possible to update the Constitution to incorporate these important principles? Example, the natural resources section repeatedly refers to utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources for the maximum benefit of its people, fish, wildlife, and waters reserved for the people for common use. There is no consideration of science or the overall ecosystem. And then she goes on to say the recent change of DNR's mission statement, recent decisions by the Board of Fish and the Board of Game that ignore recommendations based on science are but two examples of the misuse of our Constitution because it puts all this stress on use and development.
I think the Constitution is totally acceptable of scientific values, of scientific management. The sustained yield principle is written into the Constitution as a basic foundation policy. The management is not something that you can delineate in detail and tell people, tell governors and managers that here's how they shall administer a given resource by listening to biologists and physicists and so on.
Right now there's people on the game board that are claiming the Constitution is a mandate to make moose and caribou farm out of the state.
Well, that's pure nonsense. That's pure nonsense. The sustained yield should be applied to all species. We don't want to eliminate any as an excuse to promote others. So that's just the way managers and boards appointed by the governor, reflecting the governor's views, manage the resource. But it's not something that you're going to deal with constitutional language. This is a matter of having the right people in the right places.
Megan joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Vic Fisher, Megan.
Hi, it's Megan Hellenthal. My grandpa was one of the authors with you, Vic.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. I was wondering if there was anything that maybe you had to compromise on the initial Constitution that maybe you would have added or left out of it.
I don't imagine any delegate was entirely happy. There must have been compromises.
My grandpa always said the art of politics is compromise. So.
Right. John was right in the middle of most issues. He always had strong points of view, and he argued them very effectively. And he was there to compromise. And I think that if you look at the five volumes of the proceedings of the Constitution, you see the debates on every single point, very often right down to the commas, because everything was a compromise, including the wording of provisions. It's not just the substance of provisions. It was the wording. And John Hellenthal was right smack in the middle of the arguments over how you structure provisions. And yes, every single sentence, every single word in the Constitution was debated and considered. And one of my concerns about bringing the convention question up without proper years of preparation and the kind of research that should have gone into dealing with this question, shall it be a constitutional convention, and then a yes, no. We're beginning a dialogue now, just a month or two before the referendum on that question, without really thinking about what a constitution is and what's involved in having a convention. And I'm glad that KSK and Steve Heimel are having this discussion, and I think that John Havelock's book is really very important, very worthwhile. He talks about the issues in the Constitution and what might be considered. And so far as I'm concerned, I would love to have that kind of a dialogue that we're going on, that's going on today, go on for several years and have people really think about what is in the Constitution, what should be in the Constitution, and how to go about it, because that is how you decide a major issue, shall there be a constitutional convention.
Well, thank you. Was there anything in particular that you can think of, or was it all just kind of, you know, hashing it out to the last word?
There must have been something, Vic.
Oh,
you
I
were very unhappy you didn't get in there.
I was in the fray on many issues. I was on the losing end of things. I argued that 18-year-olds should vote. I argued that women's rights should be recognized in the Constitution, and Mildred Herman.
I approve.
and Mildred Herman, a grand old lady of the Constitutional Convention. Mildred argued that the first act of the territorial legislature in 1913 was to give women the right to vote, and it's a non-problem, and therefore we shouldn't have it in the Constitution. That was one of the fights I lost in the floor.
Megan, thanks. That was a great question to end the show with.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Alex says, Vic Fisher is an Alaskan treasure. Thanks for having him on. And thanks, everybody, for all their participation in the program. Victor, we'll just have to, maybe we can continue this conversation. Maybe you could go on for 5 or 6 years.
I think it should.
All
I
right. Should. Thanks a lot. Back again next week on Talk of Alaska. Thanks to Dave Waldron, Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Ensuring our youth understand the need for workplace safety will help prevent injuries. If your middle or high school is interested in having a youth representative speak to your students about workplace safety, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health Youth Safety at 1-800-656-4972. This message is sponsored by Alaska Labor Standards and Safety. The Project Management Institute will present 3 one-day seminars at the Petroleum Club of Anchorage, October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Expert Neil Whitten will present No-Nonsense Advice for Successful Projects, Let's Talk, More No-Nonsense Advice for Project Success, and The Gift of Wisdom, Work-Life Balance for Today's Managers, Learn to Manage Projects, and more. Registration information at pmiak.org. This message sponsored by Project Management Institute, Alaska Chapter. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.